Lumos. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Shellcast Radio. I'm your host, Ezra, a.k.a. Bill, also known as Sir Ezra the Watchful, History of Magic Professor, the Flannel Wizard, obviously. Yours truly, me. Please welcome your lovely design witch to the fascination of fourth year of this year, Triwizard Champion herself, my wonderful co-host, and yours, Lottie, a.k.a. Fleur.
Hello, einen wunderschönen guten Tag. It's so good to have you back in our beautiful little cottage on the outskirts of Tinworth. Kommt rein und macht's euch gemütlich. Welcome to episode 90, in which we discuss Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. This week, we'll talk about chapter 11, Aboard the Hogwarts Express. We'll give you a quick life update with our homemade cottage ketchup, feed our brains with important trivia knowledge, and then dive head on into our chapter summary audio experience. Happy 90th episode, by the way. We are getting closer and closer to the big, fat three figures, guys.
Three figures. The big 100. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, what are we going to do for the 100th?
I don't know. What do you want to do?
Episode. I don't even know what chapter.
You want to do it? Should we do the episode like just drunk on butterbeer? Not actually drunk, but just, you know.
Yes.
Sugared up like a crazy
person. Yeah, just like the kids in Harry Potter don't actually get drunk on butterbeer.
Yeah,
right?
maybe, right?
I mean, right?
Put a little Bailey's in there if you want, but I mean, just, you know. Have some fun with it.
I wonder if that's... No, I think that's earlier than that. 10 episodes, which is 10 weeks from now. I was wondering if that's in Kent, because if you haven't heard already, we are going to Kent this year for the first time. You're going to be there for the second time, correct?
Oh, more than that. I think I've been there... Yeah.
You're a veteran.
I've been there a couple times. Let me think. 1, 2, 3... I've been there a few times.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you can show me around.
I'll show you around. Yeah. It's fun. It's a lot of fun, honestly.
I'm so excited to go.
Yeah, there's vendors. Our friend Swish and Flick will be there. They have their own booth. So be sure to kind of, you know, if you do go, check them out. I think they've done in the past like a cosplay competition, or they've
really?
Done a live episode recording.
Yeah.
There's a little stage where they go up there and people do some performances and they might sing or do some acting, and they run their podcast up there, which
has
been
cool.
Pretty cool. Yeah, it's fun. So I cannot wait. We're going to be up there. I think we've got a hotel we're staying that night and then staying into Saturday. I think they're only doing it on that Saturday, but there's also some events Friday night. Mm-hmm. I'm sure some of the local taverns will be serving some butter beer on Friday. They'll have the recipes ready to go. And they'll be dishing those out. There are things like they used to do like a 4K or a 5K. 4K. Look at me thinking about like video terminology. You know, oh, shot this in 4K, guys. But I think they run a 5K sort of event up there on Friday, or maybe it's Saturday morning. I'm
oh,
not
that's
sure,
cool.
But I think they do like some sort of thing, and people go up there and run.
Do you think Katie's gonna run?
How's she doing? We need to check on her leg and how she's doing. I don't know. I haven't really. Yeah. Kept up with her. That was a pretty
Katie,
big...
is your knee okay?
Yeah, Katie.
Tell us right now.
You okay? Anyway, we're excited, though, to go up there to...
And by the way, sorry, we didn't mention, it's July 19 and July 20.
Okay.
It looks like.
So the 19th will be that Friday.
Wizardly World of Kent.
It's the Wizardly World of Kent, guys. We cannot say Potterfest like we used to.
Wizarding World.
Potterfest? Is that what it used to call it? Yeah. So anyway, it's fun. And we're going to be there.
Yes.
Can't wait. Unfortunately, too, we have to do mention anybody who was planning on going. We're not going to Portland this year, though.
No.
To LeakyCon. It is just a big trip. It's a long trip. It's a lot of money. And we have other things that we're working on this summer. Mm-hmm. We've got our own sort of trip. There's going to be a period of time where in which Lottie is going to have to go back to Germany without me, you guys.
I know.
I'm nervous. What am I going to do?
Aww.
What am I going to do?
You're going to call me.
What are we going to do for those 3 weeks, by the
way?
What are we going to do? Are we going to record virtually? We're going to do a little, are you going to be a guest on the show from far away?
And, yeah.
I mean,
remember our first episode on Avatar?
Absolutely.
Last Airbender? Finale.
I do remember it. Our first ever recording. So we've had folks from the West Coast. We've had folks from Germany on here on this podcast before. So that's what we'll do with Lottie. I'll send her with a microphone and make sure she's all set up to go. Okay.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right.
Otherwise, how are you doing? How did you sleep last night?
Well, I went to bed super late, right? Because I was watching a show.
Oh, yeah. You gotta catch me up on.
I think I watched two episodes extra.
Get me caught up on it.
I couldn't stop.
It was a murder mystery, so.
Yeah, it's called, I think you guys probably have, I'm sure I'm behind and everyone's already seen it. It's A Murder at the End of the World or something like that.
Yes.
It's on Hulu or Amazon. I don't know. I don't even know what I was watching.
Netflix?
No, not Netflix, okay. But anyway, it's out there. You can go search it and figure out what streaming service it's on. I don't remember. And my sister recommended it, though, and I got to say she is 2 for 2 in recommendations.
Yeah.
This summer alone, she recommended Botkin, which is another sort of murder mystery show set in Ireland, which was awesome.
Was
I was like, well, this is cool just to go there and see some of the places that they filmed that at. But yeah, I stayed up super late and then I slept like a baby.
Good.
Oh, I slept like a baby. Did you sleep okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, I slept.
Do people think it's funny that we're asking each other? Like, we were both there.
No, we were not.
We were asleep.
I have a reason for it, though.
Yeah, okay.
Because I wanted to know. Do you want to know a couple fun facts about sleep?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please, I guess. Yes.
Did you know you spend 1/3 of your life sleeping?
Wow.
1/3 of your entire life on this earth is spent asleep.
How could you adjust? Okay, how about this, though? What if people slept an extra hour or two, like they got 10 hours versus the people who only sleep 7. Are the people only sleeping 7 getting more out of life or not?
Well, yeah, do the math over.
No, hold on. Think about it, though. If just because you sleep 10 hours every single day doesn't mean that you're not maybe more well-rested and you get up and attack that day and get more out of that life than the person who got up at 7 and was just dragging around for 2 hours. Like,
yeah,
oh my God.
Yeah, I give you that. However, you should not be sleeping more than 9 hours on a regular basis. So,
oh, crap.
Unless you're a child or a teenager. But when you're an adult, you should stick to the 7 to 9 hours. It is okay to, even though this says you can't really catch up on sleep, but if you've been sleep deprived, sometimes it's normal for a certain period of time to sleep longer than that. But it talks about a regular schedule. So if you regularly every day sleep 10 to 12 hours, then you should
get yourself checked
out because something's wrong.
Right.
No,
something's wrong.
Did you know that the longest anyone has gone without sleep is... Oh, I'll let you guess. What do you think?
The longest anyone's gone without sleep?
Mm-hmm.
I hear that... From what I've read and what I remember is that you actually can, it's very dangerous.
It is.
It's more dangerous than like not drinking water and not eating and not whatever, you know.
Yeah, you can go
a lot longer without food and stuff as long as you're getting your rest. Dang, 90 some hours? I don't know.
No, way more.
Way more?
Hmm.
Somebody actually stayed awake for that long?
The longest someone has gone without sleep is 11 days and 25 minutes.
Did they make it?
Yeah.
Wow.
While still in high school, a student went 264.4 hours without sleep, for which he won first place in the 10th annual Great San Diego Science Fair in 1964. When asked if he would do it again, Randy, apparently is his name, gave a resounding no.
Dang, Randy.
Yeah.
That's wild.
He was strictly observed. Like, he went under strict observation during that time, so.
I would be out on that. I don't think no. That's not something I would risk or be interested in trying. There was a guy, we were reading a book, and I forget who it was. It was one of the probably Silicon Valley people who was an innovator with computer chips or technology.
Okay.
And I think they said he adjusted his sleep schedule as well.
I remember that. Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He was doing like a couple hour power naps and then getting up and attacking his craft.
You
again.
Can train yourself somehow, but still I think in the long run it's not a healthy I don't know. Not a healthy practice. I mean, every
doesn't seem like it.
It's funny. Science still doesn't really know all the mechanics of why exactly we sleep. I mean, there's some speculations, you know, that you have to process all the information that comes in while I'm slapping my own face.
Wow.
Oh, you have to process all that information. But then, isn't it wild? The things we dream about have sometimes zero, you think nothing to do with anything that we did the day before.
Yeah, that is weird. So my dream last night, for example, was we were, my dad was actually calling the Scottish.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that this morning.
He was calling them and he had to write them and he was like going back and forth. And he was like, look, guys, I mean, I think it's okay for you guys to go ahead and move the podcast studio from this room to that room. But we got to let's just wait a day or two because I got to hear back from the Scottish government about whether that's regulation or not. We're moving it from the pink room to the blue room. Legitimately, they were called the pink room and the blue room. Why?
That's
because
funny.
My old sister's bedroom was pink and mine was blue.
Oh, yeah.
Straight up. I mean, classical kind of whatever. I don't know. That was the dream I had last night. How did that? It had to do with podcasting, my dad, who we had just seen, and Scotland.
Didn't we talk about Scotland?
Yeah, we always do with dad. It's like, but anyway, that was my dream last night. I guess some crazy ones. I had night terrors as a kid. Growing up, I was always just like, I definitely would have been a watchman on the wall because I would have kept the villagers safe, like straight up. They might have got annoyed with me because at every shadow or rustling in the weeds, I'm on high alert. Like, what was that? You know,
that's true. I can attest to that.
Oh, man. I don't want anybody to try it, but I mean, I don't want any critter getting past me. I know if there's critters crawling on my back porch. I know.
I was going to say, we don't even live in a big house yet, but the little noise we hear here, it's really, really quiet around here.
Yeah.
But if there's anything you hear,
bam.
You're going downstairs checking.
Lottie has woken, she's woken up numerous times to me just standing in bed with my staff, my wizard staff.
Yep.
And that might be taken the wrong way, but I actually have a walking stick staff next to my bed, just in case I gotta whack anybody.
Yeah, so if you try and intrude our house, I will
literally stand up and say, "You shall not pass." That's literally what I will say if you try to get in.
That's hilarious.
I'm trying to sleep, man. Just hit me up in the morning, okay? Like, goodness gracious. Anyway, all right. So what else? I mean, what else been going on? Cottage Ketchup. You got anything?
Just really getting used to this new sleeping schedule and loving it. There's a new schedule also with our gym routine where before we really tried so hard to go 3 times a week, which was difficult sometimes.
We did, though.
We did. Most of the time. Yeah. But it was hard to convince yourself, your brain, and your body to go when you're super tired after a whole day of school.
Yeah.
And now I feel really good about our new schedule. We go every other day. So we skip a day where we just go for a walk or do very, very light, I don't know.
Edit for hours.
Yep. and then the other day we definitely go to the gym for at least 45 minutes to an hour, which has been, I mean, it's not crazy. I know some people go 2 to 3 hours, but
yeah,
I feel very, very good about that so far.
Me too. And it's nice. And we kind of go midday too, which I think you were alluding to, which is like we have our breakfast, do our thing, and do like a midday break.
Right, it is a nice break and gets your body going again, and yeah.
But I mean, again, that's the thing is that why is no one there when we go? Because it's not a normal thing that people can do. And I always want to mention to people that like
that's true.
It is difficult. It is really difficult to be in our society and just the way that it operates and functions. It's so hard. I think
to keep active, as an adult.
Right, because you have so many things that you have to do.
Especially here where you drive everywhere. Yeah.
Right. The pace of living is so fast in the United States. Like, and I would say, I'm sure that it is in Germany too and other places. I've only been to a few different places. But like when I went to Germany, I just felt like it was totally different over there. And I felt like there was just a different type of, you know, pace to life, if that makes sense. And here in America, I always just feel like, wow, we are running around like crazy. It's no wonder we have so many people that are just kind of, you know, stressed out, suffering and hard to make ends meet and stuff. And you wouldn't think that, but it's real. It's like a real thing. That's most of us. I mean, we read about these people who kind of have made it and done awesome things and we're all like, oh, it's awesome. But I mean, it's most people are really just, you know, kind of
And like, I can definitely tell you that in Germany or in Berlin, I have never lived in rural Germany. But in Berlin, it's kind of the same. You feel the hustle and bustle of the city, which here, if we live more on the, you know, countryside, you could say.
It's
a small town, but
right.
We can drive, you know, 5 minutes this way or 5 minutes that way, and we'll be out in the field, which is beautiful and awesome. Yeah. And I don't miss the hustle and bustle of the city.
Yeah, let me say, too, just so, because I know, you know, for example, we have a friend of ours who's been on the podcast, Rika, many times.
Yeah.
And I want to say it's actually less that it's not that there's the same sort of like, you know, stressor that there is stress. There's stress in both situations, both countries or whatever.
Yeah.
But it feels to me like when I was there, just the way that in Berlin and in Germany that they handled stress was so different.
Okay.
It felt like there was like different priorities culturally. There was just different things that you. What are you laughing about? Like definitely having a few drinks around town where that was for sure. I mean, in Berlin, they're basically like, you guys can have your butterbeer in public on the go in transit. Feel free.
Yep.
They're like, no problem. I mean, we went to Scotland one time, and Liza's like, I'm gonna drink this butterbeer out here in public. I'm like, no, you can't. They're more like the United States. Can't do that. It's funny. That was funny.
Funny.
You remember that? You remember you walked out with, you're like, I'm going to drink this out in public. What are you doing?
I know.
That is illegal, young lady. We're about to be thrown in jail.
So funny that there's no such thing. You can drink whatever you want outside.
I know. It's so bizarre. I'm like walking down the street and.
Which is not, I'm not saying it's a, you know, perfect,
no, a
great
good thing.
Thing
yeah,
but
yeah, no. It was just,
it was how you grew up.
It's just funny. What I was actually thinking about was the 3-hour dinners.
Yep.
4 or 5 sometimes. I mean, Enrique, tell me if I'm wrong, but I mean, people will go out and I'm like, oh, sweet. When I first got there, awesome. We're getting there at 5 o'clock, going to sit down, have a nice meal. We'll be back here by 7. Guys, we were getting dessert around 7. And in America, it's like, what are we doing? 30 minutes is too long. We're like, why are we still here?
I mean, you also wait for the food longer, typically. I mean, depends on which place you go to. But
yeah.
If you go to a very good restaurant and it's well... like packed
with
people, you wait probably 30-40 minutes.
Yeah. I just thought it was funny. And again, I'm only used to like the Columbus area. You know what I mean? So I'm sure there are other, you know, even inside of America, there's tons of cultures
huge.
And different, you know.
I'm always amazed that, there's countries that are so big and we just think, okay, you go there once and you explore a little area and you now feel like you know the people and the country.
Right.
But then if you look at the United States or even India or Russia or China.
Huge.
You think like, oh, I've been to China. I know how they do it there.
Yeah,
or
I know.
I've been to India. Or we all have
that's
that.
Like what I just said. I've been to Germany. I'm a Chinese.
I mean, Germany is a little smaller. And there's certainly huge differences also between north and south and different areas stuff. But it just blows my mind that sometimes we just have this fixed image in our heads of, you know, India, Indian culture. I'm way more exposed to Indian culture now here because we have more Indian families in our school district.
Cool. Absolutely.
Which is awesome. I've never been like, you know, really excited. We had other cultures and cultures. I don't know.
Cultures.
We have other different, you know, cultures that migrated to Berlin, obviously, and we have more exposure to them. So it's interesting, but it always blows my mind how vastly different the culture within a country can be.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
That's all I wanted to say.
For sure. I mean, here, I mean, let me tell you, go on down south, and I mean, it's a totally different world down there, buddy. Let me tell you.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah.
All
on that note, one more thing.
Yes.
It was so cool. Yesterday, we had a little get-together with family and you know, extended family. Lots of people were there at your aunt's house. And
right.
It was awesome to see everybody. But I feel so, so bad when I sit next to this super nice elderly couple. And they want to have, you know, we want to start a conversation.
Right.
And when they start talking and they sit a little bit further away because they were longer tables.
Yeah.
And they start in their super thick Southern accents.
Yep.
I feel so bad because I had no clue what they were saying.
Not a clue.
And
bless your little
just
heart.
Smiling and nodding and felt really stupid. And
no.
I mean.
Because let me tell you, people will tell you here in the United States and any of you who are listening.
Apologetically, like I was very sorry that I couldn't really have a conversation with them.
We love to kind of joke and poke. I think it's a funny thing. I think comedy is really interesting because especially when people like talk about our different dialects and the different ways in which we talk. Yeah. And it's funny because they sound funny to us. Yeah. You know? And it's just, it's not a dig at anybody. It's just we think it's cool. And we actually, a lot of times we want to try it to sound that way because we think it's interesting.
Yeah.
But like, you know, down south, it's my sister would go down there. She'll tell you, my Uncle Junior, my golly, you could not understand a word he said.
Yeah.
I mean, straight up, my mother used to like tell my dad ahead of time. She was like, you've got to tell us what he's saying. Like, you've got to. I mean, so again, English is your second language.
Yeah.
And so you're also trying to, you know, pick up on some of what people are saying. It's right. It's difficult. And then when they have a dialect that's hard to hear, like when we went to Scotland, same thing. The Scottish accent was very difficult for you.
I love it, though.
You kept looking at me, and I was just like, give me a second. Hold on. Say that one more time. And you know, because they say it so fast that you're like, what did you just say? And it's in some of their street names, and when they throw in some specific like pronouns and stuff about places, and you're like, okay, I'm lost. Yeah. I'm now lost about what you just said. And it's funny. Yeah. You have to laugh about it. It's okay.
I know. I felt like I just felt rude if I had said, you know, can you say that again? Excuse me, what?
Right.
Like every single time they said something. So I'm glad. Then you sat down in between of us and you could kind of, you know, interpret. Lead the conversation and
pass along information.
Right. Or you.
I was interpreting.
The best thing is, you just casually repeat what they just said in your words. So I could understand it. You know how they do it sometimes as a device in like movies or audiobooks when the person, like Chewbacca, they never give you any captions for his words, but have the person kind of repeating what he says.
Right. Yeah. Or responding to it in the context of what that person says helps you understand what was just said prior.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But instead of saying just no to them, they will say, no, we're not going out to eat right now. You know, so you understand he asked, can we go get something to eat?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway. So.
Boy,
lots of cottage ketchup today.
Tons of it, guys. Sorry.
We're excited,
though.
Oh, yeah. It's time to get excited.
I just want to say, too, as we dive into now Harry Potter stuff, feel free. I know we've changed the YouTube page like 15 times, and it's the... I debated about calling it not the Room of Requirement, but like the Page of Requirement, because it's
that's
just this
cool. Where did that come from?
I've thought about it multiple times.
First time I hear about it.
Oh, really? Sorry. I'm being serious. I've thought about it because I'm like, it's changed.
Because it always changed.
It's always changing.
Yeah, according to our needs.
My need, you know? And I'm like, that's the Page
hilarious.
Of Requirement.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll do something like that funny. The Tube of Requirement. Go check it out.
I have
ideas and thoughts for these funny little shorts, and I've gotten so fired up today. You know, I watch Harry Potter Folklore. I watch Harry Potter Theory, and I love the Super Carlin Bros. I think they're really great shows. I think they're really, really, really fun, and I do take a lot of inspiration from them. But I got to say, the main place where I get some information, one is source material. One is this podcast and the conversations that we have. And then two is like, I've always said it before, Quora or Reddit. Mm-hmm. And I have this like feed that comes through with intriguing questions, and that will typically lead me to another question. So I have about 4 to 5 brewing questions on my mind that as the next couple episodes unfold, I'm going to start bringing some of that to the table with you guys.
We were brainstorming right before we started this episode, and there's some good ones.
There's some good ones. Actually, my trivia question for you today is related to some future theories and thoughts that I have.
All right. Well, then let's hear it.
Wow. Are we fighting? You guys heard it here, man. These guys that really fight a lot. Ready for the first question?
Yes.
Okay. Holy smokes. Which of the 1,000 tabs do I have it on? Here it is. How many years did Hagrid attend Hogwarts as a student? Dun, 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 da, da. So now, as you're thinking about it, I like to do research on all these different thoughts and theories that I have. So based upon a question that I have, which I'm not going to reveal yet, all right, I know people are out there poaching my ideas, okay?
Yeah.
And they're more than welcome to. I also will poach ideas myself, okay? Yeah. But I just, I ain't going to reveal my I have a theory that is pretty awesome. I want to say too, my Aurelius Dumbledore theory is great.
Yeah.
About him having a child with Nagini, and it is starting to blow up and take some traction. Yes. I don't care what anybody says; it's canon in my head. So this one now is starting to turn into one of those personal favorites for me, and it involves Hagrid. And I'm not going to say anything else about it, but I want to know in which, how many years did he actually attend Hogwarts as a student?
So,
you base, I can narrow it down for you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7.
So my first,
those are options.
I had an initial, and I'm not going to think too hard about it because either I get it wrong or not, you know, either your brain remembers or not.
Right.
My first feeling in this case was that Tom Riddle, I think, is a fifth year when he kills Myrtle, I think.
Okay.
But I think that Hagrid was younger. He was not in the same year as Tom.
Okay. Okay.
And the first number that popped into my head that I feel like he said, I got kicked out when I was in my third year. If that's the correct answer, though, then I would have to say he completed 2 years and did not complete the third year.
And we're going to go ahead and give him this third year, though. It was at the end of the year.
Okay, so you say, I'm just saying it's in ding, this ding, third ding, year, ding, right?
You got it right.
Yay!
Third year, yes.
Oh my gosh, that makes me so happy. That was actually one where I didn't think, it just popped into my mind. I think he felt, I felt like he said to Harry, Hermione, and Ron, or was it just Harry? Where he said, I got kicked out in my third year, right?
Yeah. And so for me, it pertains to, it's kind of a date and time question that I have about a theory that I'm sort of developing with Hagrid and a relationship that he has.
Was I right, though? Is Tom older?
Older. Yeah. I don't remember the exact. So I know the year would be that took place was 1940. It was the 42-43 school year. So 1943, I believe, is when you know, someone has been killed, right? Moaning Myrtle, Myrtle Warren has been killed, and so therefore they're like looking for the culprit. And I think
he found the chamber in his fifth year. I think that's what he said, didn't he?
Yeah, and so it's 43, is when Hagrid 16. Is booted.
Yeah,
right. They snap his wand, and he's out of there. So
43, yeah. So he was 16. I mean, not Hagrid, but Tom was. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, year 5. Okay.
Yep, you cool. got it though. I that was a wild one. Sorry, it's one to.
Oh, okay. Let's see. This one is more of a guessing. I mean, if you've not read it anywhere, maybe you remember, but it's more of a good guess. But I'll give you a plus minus 2 years. Okay.
Okay.
So there had been at least 125 editions of the tournament, of the Triwizard Tournament, before it was discontinued.
Got it.
How many times did Hogwarts win?
Win the tournament? There's a date for that, actually?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a number? There's a number?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, where was that? Was that in the actual books?
That was an article.
Pottermore article or something?
Yes, by J.K. Cool. Rowling herself on Wizarding World.
That is awesome. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to have any clue. But
I'll give you a plus minus 2 year range.
So you said they've had the tournament 125
times.
125 times. Mm-hmm. I would say Hogwarts won it about 30% of the time. So what is that? Around 40, I'd say about 44 times. 44 times they've won it.
Sorry, that's not the right answer.
What is it?
They won it 63 times. But and Beauxbatons, 62.
Dang, sweet.
That makes 125. That's all of them.
So Durmstrang's never won?
Looks like it, according to this.
Suckers. Dang, guys.
I mean,
now I'm rooting for the
so
underdog.
So far,
but
you know, about wizard pure wizard blood and stuff like that.
That's kind of
because they don't
up.
Take any. I think no Muggleborns are allowed to go to Durmstrang, which we learn about in this chapter.
Huh.
But yeah.
Weird. Okay.
Sorry, no point for you, love.
That's okay. That's okay.
I have the Beauxbatons thing in front of me. Wait, where does it say that? Oh, here. Maupassant has always enjoyed a cordial relationship with Hogwarts, though there has been... Oh, that's why they said... I'm sorry. It was maybe misleading, but they said at least 125 times. So probably more. Way more.
Oh, okay.
But they said we don't have any concrete information. So if it's the case that Durmstrang never won, we know that at least 125 times they have competed because we know the numbers for both of those schools.
Gotcha.
Sorry if that was misleading.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's I think it's interesting. Maybe they did win a few or whatever, but it seems like seems like it's a big competition between Beauxbatons and Hogwarts. That seems to be the major two contenders for it. So.
Right. There has been a healthy rivalry in international competition such as the Triwizard Tournament, in which Maupassant has 62 wins to Hogwarts 63.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, so they were close.
Yeah, so who won this year? I mean, who do they actually name as the winner?
Well, Harry, he gets the prize money.
Yeah, but what about Cedric? Didn't he give some of that to Amos? Didn't he attempt to give some of it to Amos Digger? I know he gives it to Fred and George, but I'm sorry, we'll look it up later.
No, I don't know.
Cedric.
Yeah.
Hopefully they put him down somewhere as the winner.
Yeah, I mean, he got to the cup the same time as Harry.
He could have taken it. Yeah. He actually says, let's take it together. Yep. Right?
And they did, and that was the how you determine the winner is who got to the cup first, and they both did, so.
Anyway.
Crazy times.
Crazy times.
That was not me rolling the dice yet.
This is me rolling the dice, ready?
Yeah. You're like your...
Green.
Your nephew. Green. Which beloved pet is killed during Harry's escape from Privet Drive with the Order of the Phoenix?
His owl. Hedwig.
It's the Hedwig.
What a sad question.
Hedwig's not even back yet. She's still on
right, she's still out right in our reread. She's still out and about. Alrighty.
And we have the color orange. I think we had orange last week, too.
Okay. In the Tales of the Three Brothers, what prize does the first brother receive from death?
What prize?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the hallow.
I'm going to read it to you specifically. In the Tales of the Three Brothers, what prize does the first brother receive from death? Da, 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 da. You overthink things.
So the youngest brother gets the cloak.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a 50-50 chance.
You know it. Say it. Out loud.
The Elder Wand.
The Elder Wand. Good job.
Yes.
Lottie likes to triple think on things.
It's terrible.
It's a thing she has. It's just so you guys know, if you're like, wow, that was kind of dramatic. just kidding. I mean,
I've heard that overthinking things can be one of the Ravenclaw traits. Okay.
Yeah.
So let me know, fellow Ravenclaws, do you think that's accurate?
Do you guys overthink stuff?
How's your brain doing today? Okay, so that means I don't have my phone here, but I'm in the lead. I think we left off at 10.5
Now
each?
She's just making stuff up. I don't have my phone here. I'll fix it later when
Ez's
not looking.
No, I'll put it in the dock, okay? Should be doing, actually, anyway. So,
yeah.
Right now, it's Fleur got 12.5 and Bill has got 11.5.
Okay.
I wonder if we ever get rid of the 0.5 ever.
Probably not.
No.
Okay, moving on, and we are into Chapter 11, Aboard the Hogwarts Express. Harry wakes up feeling a bit depressed about the fact that the summer holidays have come to an end. The pouring rain outside the window adds to the overall gloomy mood of the morning. While all the kids are getting ready to set off on their journey back to Hogwarts, Mr. Weasley receives an urgent message from Amos Diggory that the ex-Auror Mad-Eye Moody got in trouble with the Muggle police due to exploding dustpans in his backyard. Apparently, they were set off by intruders who were trying to ambush him. However, Moody is known for his paranoia ever since he retired from his position as a very successful Auror. Mr. Diggory pleads with Mr. Weasley to handle the situation since Mad-Eye is supposed to start his new job that day. Arthur takes a few notes and then he heads out immediately to solve the affair. Harry is still amazed that Amos Diggory's head is just sitting there in the middle of the fireplace with flames dancing around his face. He even watches Mrs. Weasley feed him a piece of toast before his head disappears again. Once they finish up their breakfast, Mrs. Weasley goes down to the village post office to use the local telephones. She calls 3 Muggle taxis to take them all to King's Cross in London. The cab drivers are baffled when they're requested to fit 6 huge trunks, a screeching owl, and a cat into their cars. After quite an uncomfortable journey, they arrive at the train station. All of them hurry to get their luggage inside as fast as possible to avoid getting soaked by the rain. They enter platform 9 3/4 in the usual fashion. The trio, as well as Fred, George, and Jenny, say goodbye to Mrs. Weasley, Bill, and Charlie before boarding the Hogwarts Express. All 3 adults hint that an interesting year awaits them at Hogwarts, but refuse to give any more details. On the train, Hermione and the others can hear Draco Malfoy's voice from the compartment next door. He's bragging to his friends that his father wanted to send him to Durmstrang, a school known for its focus on the dark arts. Hermione explains that both Durmstrang and Beauxbatons, another major European wizarding school, are hidden to protect their secrets, just like Hogwarts. The rain gets so heavy and the sky is so dark that the lanterns on the train are already lit by lunchtime. Harry buys a bunch of cauldron cakes from the trolley witch to share with his friends. A few fellow Gryffindors stop by their compartment to chat. Ron entertains them with stories from the Quidditch World Cup, showing off his little Victor Crumb figurine. Suddenly, Malfoy comes in and rudely interrupts their conversation. First, he mocks Ron for his shabby, outdated dress robes that are dangling from Pigwidgeon's cage. Then he makes fun of them for not even knowing about the upcoming event at Hogwarts, claiming that his own father learned about it from Cornelius Fudge firsthand. Ron is left enraged and embarrassed. When the train rolls into Hogsmeade Station, the weather has gotten so awful that they don't even envy Hagrid and the first years for their usual magic boat ride across the lake. Eager to get out of the train, they climb into the carriages that take them up to the castle.
Can we just point out that Arthur was trying to get to work with his robes on back to front?
Back to front. How do you do that? There's an opening in the back.
I know, what?
Come on, Arthur. Was he that? How was he that buff? Was he that just...
Harry flattened himself against the wall as Mr. Weasley came clattering past with his robes on back to front and hurtled out of sight.
Well, I mean, he adjusts them, though. He fixed them.
I think he was just in a hurry, but it was cute.
Yeah, something's going on.
Because he's being called downstairs because somebody's head is in the fire.
Right. Amos Diggory.
Which is the first time where Harry sees a head in the fire. Just the head.
Right. And then we'll see Sirius later on now. Mm-hmm. This becomes sort of a common thing. Right. I just want to ask you, though, have you ever walked out to school or to work with your shirt on backwards?
Probably when I was little, but not very often, no. Have you?
Have you ever walked out with, I don't know, just like, have you ever just gotten dressed in the dark and you just were like, you know, and then you're real, no, you don't.
No.
You don't.
I think it's, okay, this is, sorry, no gender generation,
it's a guy thing
here, but I feel like it's more common sometimes for guys to just, whatever, half sleepy, put that shirt on.
Just roll out. I mean, sometimes we do what's called the sniff test and we don't do the visual test.
Okay, you know? I've done that before too.
Yeah, I know the sniff test is fine, but you got to follow it up with the visual test because I've been like, oh man, like drop something on my pants the next day. We all wear pants 2 days in a row, okay?
Yes.
People are wearing your blue jeans or your khakis. You can get a couple wears out of those, okay, before we're just throwing them in the laundry. And there's been a time or two where I've been like, oh, there's a stain there. Make sure you toss these bad boys in the laundry. And it just doesn't happen. And then you're like, wow, okay, walked out of here, sniffed them, they were good. But visually, I didn't see until I got to school that
that's funny.
There's a problem. So anyway, sometimes you're just in a hurry. Arthur is, he's had a lot going
on.
Had a lot going on.
Because he was going to work anyway, but I think now he's not going to the ministry, but directly to the, or is he?
No, it seems like he's going straight to Mad-Eye's.
Right.
Right, because he's actually trying to get there before the misuse of magic department gets involved.
Because their penalties are way higher, right, for such an incident.
Right, and they're worried that Rita Skeeter is going to get wind of this and that she's going to make more news out of it. It makes the ministry look bad. They're all worried about their reputations.
Well, plus, oh yeah, you were going to say it.
Well, no, just that all I was going to say is Amos is actually in there early.
Mm.
And Amos is basically like, he's come across this before anybody else.
Right.
And so like, hey, this is going to be embarrassing. Plus, we need Mad-Eye there. He's going to be a new teacher.
Right, they're alluding to the fact that he's starting his new job. The kids don't know that he's going to be the teacher at Hogwarts. It seems like Arthur knows. So he's like, yeah,
and
understands.
I think it's like these adults also care about the reputation of Hogwarts. and they care about the reputation of certain people, and there's these kind of, you know, they're buddies, and there's this group of like, hey, we want to make sure that he's good.
Yeah.
Because you could make a lot of fun of Mad-Eye Moody over the years because he gets, this happens in society, unfortunately, where people did a lot of great, wonderful things and good services, and they get older and they make a few mistakes at the end of their life because of whatever it is, because of their age or because of paranoia or because of whatever. And then people want to go crazy. And it's like, look, they're just, you know, he's getting older. He's, they said that he's retired. He's, you know, and this is how they, again, they get a, we'll learn later about how they get a jump on him. And what really actually took place here with these dustpans.
The thing is, his paranoia, it now feels like, yeah, there's a reason for it, and he was right. It stems from, I think, because he killed or imprisoned so many wizards and witches on the dark side, and their families are now mad, and they're probably all threatening him left and right.
Right.
So I think, though, what's interesting in his case here, you know, Amos is just like, you know, Moody. He probably saw a cat, and his dustbins have some kind of mechanism that they go off if there is some sort of intruder.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing is the report that Amos gets, like, what did Moody say happened, right?
Yeah.
That Moody that describes the incident is already not Moody anymore, but it's
Barty Crouch Jr.
Barty Crouch Jr.
Yeah.
So why did he even mention an intruder? Why didn't he? Because it would be something that Moody would say, right? Moody wouldn't say, oh, there was a cat and I tried to protect myself. Mm-hmm. So he had to come up with something, but yet he mentions intruders, which could, I mean, he really must have known that no one would go investigate further because they know Moody is just, you know, he says that every other day, basically.
Right, right.
I just thought it was interesting that he really stuck to the story that there was intruders. And then what do you think really happened, though? So the police or the muggles hear, I'm sure they heard some sort of fight and the dustbins were involved. But do you think Moody was actually using the dustbins to fight? Or what do you think happened?
I think that's what Barty Crouch Jr. did. I think
he used the dustbins.
He confesses to charming them or something to make it seem as if they were the ones that had caused the disturbance.
Oh, I didn't know if he went into that detail. I just pulled this description of the incident from the wiki, which is, before the school year began, however, Moody was attacked in his home by Barty Crouch Jr. and Peter Pettigrew at Voldemort's order. Moody proved more difficult to overcome than initially thought and put up a significant fight, which alerted his muggle neighbors, but was overpowered and imprisoned in his own magical trunk. This was done as part of Voldemort's plan to regain power. You would think Moody has some sort of alarm system around his house. And then does he come out and fight them in the backyard?
Right here. Mm-hmm. I can read it to you.
Yes, please. Okay, so you found the part where Barty Crouch Jr. talks about the attack?
Yeah, so he says this. You needed Alistair Moody, said Dumbledore. His blue eyes were blazing through his, though his voice remained calm. Wormtail and I did it. So as you mentioned, he and Wormtail did it. We had prepared the polyjuice potion beforehand. We journeyed to his house.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Moody had put up a struggle. There was a commotion. We managed to subdue him, but just in time. We forced him into a compartment of his own magical trunk, took some of his hair, added it to the potion. I drank it. I became Moody's double. I took his leg and his eye. I was ready to face Arthur Weasley when he arrived to sort out the muggles who had heard the disturbance. I made the dustpins move around the yard. I told Arthur Weasley I had heard intruders in my yard who had set off the dustpins. Then I packed up Moody's clothes and dark detector, put them in the trunk with Moody, and set off for Hogwarts. I kept him alive under the Imperious Curse. I wanted to be able to question him to find out about his past, learn his habits so that I could even fool Dumbledore. I also needed his hair to make the Polyjuice Potion. The other ingredients were easy. I stole all these other things from, you know, Snape or whatever. So essentially, you know, to your question, like, what was the fight like? I think the misuse of magic, right, is that Moody was probably performing magic that was in front of muggles.
Yeah.
And it had sort of triggered some alarms at the ministry. Like, there's a fight that has broken out. And there truly was a fight between wizards. And somehow there was probably an actual duel in his living room.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, they probably dueled him right there, he and Wormtail.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And they got the drop on him, meaning they snuck up on his house and got to him while he was asleep. So he's drowsy, waking up.
Okay, so then they went out after the fight once they already...
Because think of how early this was. This was in like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And Arthur is waking up super early. They're trying to get to the Hogwarts Express by, what, 11 o'clock?
Yes.
Isn't that when they get there or something?
Right, and it takes a while probably from their village to get to London.
Yeah.
With all the kids and everything, and they eat breakfast before that, so it's probably
so
early in the morning.
They're up super early, and so this happened... You know, in the middle and right in the morning, early morning, you know, 2-3 o'clock, and these muggles heard it. They're wondering what's going on. But he says, I made the dustbins move around the yard, and I told Arthur Weasley that I had heard intruders in my yard. So basically, now what's crazy about this? And you could ask the question, like, why didn't they then? Arthur's in a hurry.
Yeah,
he's in a hurry. Amos Diggory has sent him there to investigate what's going on with Mad-Eye Moody. Moody is subdued. This is Barty Crouch Jr. who he's talking to.
Yeah.
And he basically says, Arthur, I don't know. What's up? I heard something in the backyard.
Right.
I started shooting off some spells. Well, depending on which wand he used or whose wand was used to conjure the dustpins, probably Wormtail. Wormtail probably used Voldemort's wand to conjure those dustpins to move around.
Makes sense.
So that way they couldn't use Priori Incantato to like figure out that that Mad-Eye had actually created the dustpins to move. That makes sense, right?
Okay. It's so interesting, though, that the first he mentions Arthur Weasley seemed to be, according to his story, the first one who talked to him. Yet here, Mr. Diggory already says, I mean, Arthur asks him, what does Mad-Eye say happened? And then Mr. Diggory rolls his eyes, says he heard an intruder in his yard, says he was creeping toward the house but was ambushed by his dustbins. And then what did the dustbins do? Blah, blah, blah. Made one, fired rubbish everywhere as far as I can tell. Apparently one of them was still rocketing around when the policeman turned up. So it sounds very much like,
how does Amos Diggory
know
that?
It sounds like Amos Diggory was there before, but he doesn't mention it. It seems like Arthur comes in first. Why?
So there you go. There's a minor little error.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and paint this picture here. So what we're told originally is Amos Diggory, like, hears about Mad-Eye Moody. Who did he hear from? There's alarms and bells and whistles being triggered, maybe here at the ministry. Maybe he sends a letter or an owl or something to like let them know this is what happened, and he filed an official report or something that Amos then came across.
Right. It seems like I don't think Amos went there to question him. He probably heard from somebody that Moody said this.
Right, but who went and did that? You know what I mean? Who went from the ministry
to go talk to Moody? Himself?
Because what we're actually told by Barty Crouch Jr. is that I was just barely ready for when Arthur Weasley showed up. So I think that's just a, you know.
That raises the question, though. Is there a spy at the Improper Use of Magic office who told them about this? But why would they then even know? That doesn't make sense. Well, it does. Why would they even, like, raise awareness around Moody and because the Muggles heard about it, so they have to deal with the Muggles. Yeah, no. Okay, never mind.
I don't know what you're saying.
I was wondering if somebody was in the know about the plan and who works at the improper use of magic and then kind of led this narrative.
Gotcha. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Could be. But yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe Moody himself, I don't know, they had a fireplace conversation with him, someone.
Yeah, or he just submitted
like Amos pops into the fireplace here at the Weasley's house. They probably questioned him real quick, real briefly. I don't know. But it seems like everyone just heard about it and someone has to go there finally. But then you're right. The question is, how does Amos know all the details about how
it's an error. It's just an error in the editing process, I think, of this whole thing is that they didn't quite there's a continuity issue here between that chapter and then the Veritaserum chapter later on where Barty Crouch Jr. says, "Hey, Arthur was the first one on the scene. Mm-hmm. I had to get ready to explain the situation." Well, how did Arthur even know to go there?
Right.
I mean, I get that there's some magic that alerts them in the ministry that something's going on, but in our chapter that we're in right now, it's like
Somebody has questioned him before.
Exactly. Yeah. Amos basically says, "Here's what Mad-Eye said." Mm-hmm. And Barty Crouch Jr. says to us, "Well, the first person to show up was Arthur Weasley." Doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So that's just an error by the editor not having some sort of continuity there about, I think, I mean, I could be wrong, maybe, but like maybe he does submit sort of an owl or a quick little memo of some kind that says, "Hey, this is my explanation for what happened." Yeah. And like, all right, let's send Arthur Weasley out there. Probably.
Gotcha. Yep.
All right. Well, we labored on that for a little bit. Sorry. Yeah. But there you go.
I mean, it's a very important thing that is nowhere in the movie. You know, it's one thing when you first read about it, you're like, okay, who's Mad-Eye Moody? We don't even know him yet. Mm-hmm. This is the first time we hear his name, I think. So it's easy to forget about this little conversation that happened here.
Yeah. Here's a trivia question for you.
Okay.
Where during the time that... From what we're told at the movie, Tom Riddle goes back to, or Voldemort, sorry, Baby Mort, goes back to the Tom Riddle house.
Yeah.
And we know that Frank Bryce is killed there, and that's where Wormtail is sort of doing his whole thing. Nagini is there, and Barty Crouch Jr. is not there in the book. In the movie, he is there. Now, the reason I bring that up, here's the trivia question for you. Where is Voldemort during this entire time that the Triwizard Tournament is going on? They tell us in that Veritaserum chapter that I was just in where I'm kind of like the whole reveal happens later on. You ready for this?
He doesn't hang out at the house the whole time?
So, Dumbledore says, what happened? Mm-hmm. What became of Wormtail after you attacked Moody? And he says, quote, "Wormtail returned to care for my master in my father's house and to keep a watch
over my
father."
At Barty Crouch Sr.'s house?
House, yes. So, but... Wow. "But your father escaped," said Dumbledore. "Yes, after a while he began to fight the Imperious Curse just as I had done. There were periods where he knew what was happening. My master decided that it was no longer safe for my father to leave the house, and he forced him to send letters to the ministry instead." Enter Percy Weasley, who starts to kind of like manage things.
Freak out.
Right?
Freaks out that
this whole time,
is not there.
I think it's interesting. They're at the Tom Riddle house, and
then they're also at Voldemort's father's graveyard.
Yeah.
So, which is by the house, so that kind of leads you to think, okay, they've been there the whole time.
Right, but they're just apparating back and forth and moving around, and Wormtail is helping transport him. So,
yeah, you wonder why because they probably, Muggles came in to investigate the murder scene of Frank Bryce, and they were like, oh, this kind of sucks.
I think we just forget that Barty Crouch was under the Imperious Curse for so long.
Yeah.
You know, and that this was already...
Wait, so at this point, right now, as we speak, is he already under the Imperious Curse?
Some
Senior.
Time, because remember, there's some time between the Quidditch World Cup and there's this chaos at the ministry
that goes on. Yeah.
That Barty Crouch Jr. has escaped, and he got away from Winky and everything, and so Barty Crouch Sr.
Right now he just attacked.
Yeah, Moody. The reason he attacks Moody, he's instructed to, so he has returned to Voldemort, and like he and Voldemort have been conversing,
right?
And it's actually they'll overpower Barty Crouch Sr. and put him under the Imperious
Curse. So as Percy goes in today, because this is the next thing that happens,
This is our clue.
Arthur leaves. Yeah, Arthur leaves the house in a hurry to solve that situation, and the kids are getting ready for school, and Bill and Charlie want to come with them to say goodbye right at the platform, but Percy's like, sorry guys, gotta go into work, they need me.
Why is what's the reason? Why does he need to go in? I can tell you, Mateo.
Well, because it's been so crazy the whole week, right? And
well,
his work's been piling up or something.
It's been piling up, but also this is your clue to the Imperious curse. This is I think this is the clue. Percy says that Barty Crouch Sr. has been relying more and more on him. And as we go throughout this whole thing, is like he's starting to kind of delegate some different tasks.
Yeah, you're right. He says, I just can't justify taking more time off at the moment. He told them Mr. Crouch is really starting to rely on me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's just a little clue planted here in the beginning that, okay, because you have to have the timeline in your mind as the writer to know when all these things sort of are going to happen or transpire. So.
Yes.
But get right here, for example, this is one of the things that as in the Veritaserum chapter where everything is explained. So he says, Winky let out a wail. Okay. Now it was just Father and I alone in the house.
Yeah.
And then Crouch's head rolled on his neck and an insane grin spread across his face. My master came for me. He arrived at our house late one night in the arms of his servant, Wormtail. My master had found out that I was still alive. He had captured Bertha Jorkins in Albania. He had tortured her. She had a great deal to tell him. She told him about the Triwizard Tournament, about the Moody going on to teach at Hogwarts.
Right.
He finds out all these different things, right? There's a memory charm there placed on Bertha that then led him to know, actually, Barty Crouch Jr. is still alive. So, boom, 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 a master conceived a plan. He still knew that was his faithful servant, perhaps his most faithful of all time. So he conceives this plan. He needed me. He arrived at our house near midnight. My father answered the door. The smile spread across Barty's face as he's telling the story here. It was very quick. My father was placed under the Imperious curse by my master. Now my father was the one imprisoned, controlled. My master forced him to go about his business as usual, to act as though nothing was wrong, and I was released. I awoke. I was myself again, alive as I hadn't been in years.
Wow.
So, and then, that's when he sort of asks him to go, you know, do his thing.
Yep.
So, because he was breaking free of the curse, right? When this last chapter, he was, like, getting away from Winky.
Yeah.
But then he is laying there stunned in the forest, right? I'm pretty sure he cast the thing. And then they sent out their stunning spells, the ministry. They hit him, and they found Winky. They revive her, but they didn't see him under the invisibility cloak.
Yep.
Barty Crouch does, gets him back to his house. Right. Bertha then lets Voldemort know what's up. They go to Barty Crouch Sr.'s house at midnight, put him under the Imperious coasting curses, and they release his son.
Yeah.
And we're off and running. So just for everybody to kind of be, because I need to go back and kind of remember some of those things and remember what transpired. But Bertha led the way on that. Bless her heart. Poor thing. Golly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Tragic. And there you go.
I mean, sorry. Poor Bertha. But also, poor taxi drivers.
Back to the.
I think it's so cute, though, that Mrs. Weasley has to go into town to use one of the local phone booths. Telephone, probably one of the red telephone booths that we all know from England, right? The English-British classic thing. They don't even use them anymore, I think. I think some of them have turned into like Wi-Fi hotspots, which is pretty cool. But they're awesome, and she goes there, uses a Felitone. So funny that I think it's cool, though, that she knows how to call a taxi. She does not seem to need help from Hermione or Harry in this moment. So sometimes she seems a little more, I don't know, knowledgeable about that kind of stuff than Arthur, I wonder.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the poor taxi drivers have six huge suitcases. And there is a little difference, I think, between a trunk and a trunk-style suitcase. They're larger and more squared and have a heart shell to them, right?
Yeah.
So they're, just imagine, huge, heavy suitcases for six kids.
Yeah.
She called three taxis. And then you have to fit that screeching owl in there. And Crookshanks freaks out because the fireworks, filibuster's fireworks, go off mm-hmm. in Fred or George's trunk, one of the twins, and they are no heat, wet start fireworks. That's so, I thought that was cool. Wet start, does that mean you have to water them to start them, or does it mean they can, they just don't have to be?
Yeah, wet start, it was raining the whole time, so maybe they're just, yes, know, they're moving the, right, and it's been raining.
Good thinking.
Right. So they, it must have leaked, he's in so there, smart. And then, you know. Thanks.
Yeah.
You smart too.
So imagine that. I don't know if Mrs. Weasley had to put on a little memory charm on them. She feels bad for them and doesn't know how to handle it.
Yeah.
And then when they say goodbye at the platform, like you said, I don't know if you mentioned it earlier, they are leaning against mm-hmm. the barrier and then they just kind of fall through.
Yeah. I don't, was it just, was it all three of them? Was it the trio? Was it,
it seems
Harry?
Like they're a group. They're going in groups.
Right, but was it, I kind of wondered if it was Jenny and Hermione just leaning up again, like if that was them mm-hmm. leaning up and then talking and they kind of rolled into it, or was it Ron and Hermione, you know? The only reason I ask that question is because I often think of those two as like, okay, yeah, let's not be what it's, makes more sense? Two girls there, or maybe like, maybe these mm-hmm. two are casually chatting closely, leaning up against this pillar, very close, very,
they,
very
they
close.
They even give you a reason for the exact order they go in.
Okay.
It says they did it in groups today. Harry, Ron, and Hermione, the most conspicuous since they were accompanied by Pigwidgeon and Crookshanks,
yeah,
went first. They leaned casually against the barrier, chatting unconcernedly, and slid sideways through it. And as they did so, platform 9 3/4 materialized in front of them.
What were they chatting about? What's their yeah, kind of thing?
You know, like when you ask to act natural, just talk about something. And
just
you're
talk.
Like,
or your background actors who are right. like... doing
what do you
thing.
Talk about? Yeah,
yeah, where they're moving their mouth and they're talking, there's some chatter, but right. really, what are they freaking talking about?
Right.
And only those people know in those movies, like
yeah.
if they had a small kind of funny conversation that they started,
yeah,
and they know in that movie, in that scene, that's what they're talking
yeah.
about. That's kind of funny
so
to
cool,
think about,
right?
right?
Yeah. You probably, your only instruction is like, you know, have either a funny conversation where someone laughs or have a serious conversation, like give them an, you know, so that there's probably a certain mood that's being
right
communicated through the scene. So you have to kind of fit that mood in there.
Yeah.
Scene.
And to yeah. make it authentic, I've heard yeah. from background actors that they basically will have that conversation. And it's, again, they're not, there's no audible sound sometimes.
Yeah.
But because they'll kind of add that in as a natural
okay.
ambience. But mm-hmm. there might be a little bit of mm-hmm. it. And it sounds really kind of funny. I think it's just this like yeah. background atmosphere that's created yeah. for the actual actors who are speaking.
Yeah.
But there are some kids, especially in in the Harry Potter films,
yeah.
who are talking.
Right.
And it's not meant to be heard by anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, if anybody else can hear it, it's too loud, right?
Yeah.
And it's not even full sentences. It's little whispers and phrases
right.
and stuff, right? But I feel like each time they want to go in there and do something, I think if you're two people sitting across the table,
yeah.
I imagine that they would want to have something that they're going to be talking about
yeah.
each time for each take.
Oh, so you mean it's different, not always the same? So let's say Harry, like Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson have to shoot a scene over here in the Great Hall
yeah.
and all the cameras are on there on them. But you know, over here, you're kind of in the background with your friends. And
yeah.
are you going to have a, you know, every time maybe they need 10 takes to get this right. And you over here, are you going to continue your conversation and you start each take, or are you going to say the same thing over and over again?
I think they would say the same thing, but I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Where they kind of laugh and they keep it pretty consistent. I know there's a name for it. There's a skill
okay.
that actors you know they develop this. You mm-hmm. can even see Draco Malfoy, Tom Felton do it,
yeah.
doing it in the background quite a bit
yeah.
with Crabbe and Goyle
yeah.
because they're sort of background to Harry the trio.
Yeah.
And you'll see them kind of conversing and laughing about something or rolling
yeah.
their eyes
so
or doing whatever.
Sounds or looks natural.
Looks
yeah.
natural, sounds natural. But I just, when they're leaning against this pillar mm-hmm. about to go in, I'm like, that's kind of what they're doing. They're actually
yeah.
in the book acting like they're
yeah.
having a, like chatting it up and
yep.
it's just
yeah,
funny.
Which is kind of, yeah.
It's a funny moment where the characters themselves are now acting.
Are doing that, yeah.
in the world that we're like,
right.
you know, reading about. So.
Yeah. Before they go on the train, all the adults, which is Bill, Charlie, and Mrs. Weasley, are hinting at the Triwizard Tournament multiple times, and they just can't contain themselves because it's so exciting for them. There hasn't been a Triwizard Tournament in quite a time. because of the dangers it comes with, right? And
yeah.
why they decided, I mean, I guess they say, okay, it's a time of peace, nothing's happening, so let's throw some excitement into our, I don't know, school year.
Because
they, I mean, right now, as of now, they think Voldemort is gone, right?
You know what's interesting?
Voldemort.
It feels like maybe Dumbledore was like, we're going to need some international cooperation and relationship building.
Okay, yeah.
In the years to come. I think he senses...
Is he still the Supreme Mugwump?
I think so. Could be wrong. But is he? I don't know. Don't know. But I feel like, though, he would want these international relationships to kind of start to kind of, you know, come back and to build this relationship between everyone, because there is a chance he's starting to sense, and Chamber of Secrets is opened, a phantom sort of Voldemort has showed up.
Yeah.
What do they call him? Vapormort.
Right.
They call him Vapormort, and then you've got, you know, we don't know about Baby Mort yet, but we're going to find out at the end of this year that good thing we did that. You've got Sirius Black, who was on the loose there for a while. There's a time where Dumbledore doesn't know that he's not, you know, Voldemort's top dog. Right?
Right.
Top dog. Get it?
Right.
and so I think he probably was like, you know what? Look, okay, with the Vapormort and then the chamber being opened and this weird diary that looks like a Horcrux and then Sirius gets loose, wouldn't it surprise me around year two if he hits up the other schools and says, look, we need to start to build our relationships again and get the Triwizard Tournament going.
Yes. And he is still the Supreme Mugwump. We know that because the ministry is going to dismiss him from that position once he's, you know, his statement about Voldemort's return in 95.
Gotcha.
That's when he gets all his titles are revoked, basically.
Wow. Yeah. Good call there. Good call, ministry. Good call, guys. Jiminy.
Yeah, great. But it's, what's funny in this situation here with Bill and Charlie, Charlie even hints at the fact that he will be at Hogwarts. Why? We know that because he's going to help with the dragons, getting them there and taking care of them while they're there for the first task.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bill, he kind of announces that he's going to come and watch if he gets some time off. And we know that he's going to... It's very important that he gets that time off to watch because he's going to meet his future wife.
His future wifey.
At the tournament.
What's up, Fleur? Yeah. He probably gets there and he's like, what the dang? She is something. You know what I mean? And they just hit it off. Here's something. Here's a question for you. If the Triwizard Tournament happened during a time where Bill was in his fifth, sixth, or seventh year, do you think he would have been chosen as the Triwizard Champion? Is he that good?
Ooh.
Like, I would like to look at other members of his class. Yeah. I think being a curse breaker and working for Gringotts on these dangerous sort of, like...
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think he was the... So you're not a prefect anymore, but you're for the whole school head boy.
Yeah.
Yes, I think as a head boy, you have good chances. I wonder who's the head boy right now, since Percy is gone. We don't really know who's head boy at the moment. But you would think, you know, it's not always the most powerful and versatile. It's a responsible student who's doing well academically.
Right.
So that does not always have to
be the number one, but could very well be in the top five. Your head boy is going to be one of the top.
And you have to be seventh grade, right? Head boy, you have to be in the seventh year.
I think so. I don't know. I would assume.
But yeah, I do think he would have had really good chances to be chosen as champion.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we don't know his classmates.
Because he kind of says, like, man, this would have been a good year.
He's kind of like, could have
been the champion. Could have been me.
Yep.
And Bill's like, I got this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel, I actually like the book version of Bill so much more.
Yes, me too.
I do like the actor who played Bill. I wish they just would have had more time.
Right. It's not, he doesn't get a lot of lines or time on screen. Yeah.
Right. And a lot of the lines that Bill has in the movies are really these subdued,
a little
depressing moments where he doesn't have to bring a lot of emotion. His emotions are very sad.
But he's actually this cool character who's a little bit rebellious, but also, you know, his mom loves him to death because he's his first baby. And she always goes on about his hair and stuff. It's kind of cute, the relationship between them and his, you know, her oldest son. And
I mean, because we really don't get to see, I think it would be cool to see from Fleur's perspective, like, this idea that Bill shows up and they're all like, who is that?
Yeah.
who's this guy? Because he's cool. He's got this edge about him. Yeah. And he's just sort of, he's a treasure hunter. He's an adventure. Right.
He does what he wants.
Guy. Yeah. And I just think they didn't give him enough time to do that in the films. And I hope in the TV show that they do, because
can be, me too,
so much more cool.
Because when I think he talks about how Rita Skeeter once talked about him in an article, not very nicely, right?
Oh,
and
really?
He's like, I don't care. She does that to everybody. He seems very much like confident in himself and just knows what he wants to do and what he's interested in. So,
can I just blow your mind for a second,
yes,
real quick?
Please.
This is going to be kind of take you guys out of the podcast for a second, but
what happened?
It is almost 3 o'clock. Can you believe? What time did we get up this morning?
I know. That's why I was so keen on talking about sleep, because I felt like...
I thought we started this at 9 o'clock in the morning.
The problem is this will...
It's 3 o'clock. We've been recording for 6 hours.
It's a cycle that continues.
This is bad.
It's almost dinner time for us.
Guys, we typically record this for breakfast.
I know.
And over the last 3 weeks, it has gotten to like, well, we record around lunchtime. Now we're recording around dinner time. Like, this is crazy.
I know. The cycle gets worse and worse, because now we're going to stay up later, and then tomorrow we're going to sleep
again. We're staying up late tonight. I got stuff to do.
Well, maybe let's get to bed before midnight.
Okay, sure. Okay. Sure.
Like, but 11:59.
Hey, I mean, again, as we just pointed, I mean, Voldemort sometimes shows up at your door at midnight.
Right.
If you're Barty Crouch Sr., so you got to be ready.
Constant vigilance.
Right. Anyway, let's continue to wrap this up. Rain, right?
It's just
raining, raining.
I just thought it was so cool, because continuously, it's not just mentioned in the morning, but the whole day, and we've been to Scotland before.
Oh, yeah.
It is pouring. It's getting worse, and it's so dark that when it's lunchtime, around noon, they have to light all the... It's kind of cool, that moody atmosphere. Ha ha, Moody. Because funny. Moody's going to show up later tonight.
Moody. Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah, anyway, so...
Hey, actually, even in the film, they do that, though.
I know. That's, part
of
his...
It is raining.
...entrance into the Great Hall is fighting that whatever...
Ceiling.
...lightning.
Please fight the ceiling. So...
Oh, yeah, and your theory was, if... I mean, we know it's not really like that in the book, but in the movie...
Detection.
...that the castle has some sort of...
Protection, yes.
Protection against, I mean, can tell this is an intruder.
And announced him. He was like, you know, but he plays up this whole, I spaz out at anything that kind of moves.
Right.
And so, sorry about that, Dumbledore, my bad.
Yeah.
But if you're quick, you would be like, why did the ceiling just go off on this man as he entered the room?
Yeah.
Pretty cool. Anyway, Hermione.
She hears Draco, from the other compartment.
Talking about...
Durmstrang.
And your question is, could Hermione have actually attended Durmstrang? You know the answer. We're asking you guys.
Mm-hmm.
The answer is no.
No, because she's a Muggle-born. I wonder, though, if that's a rumor that Draco just heard from somewhere in his family. And just like... We think Slytherin doesn't have any Muggle-borns. They actually do, except no Muggle-borns.
Right, but now think about this. Yeah, so Draco is just saying again that they basically take Oh my God, let me back up. Draco is basically saying that they take pure blood wizards, pure blood witches at Durmstrang, and that they have this sort of affinity for the dark arts. They teach more, not just the defensive stuff, but Hermione essentially one of the most talented, brilliant. Witches of her age could not have attended there and would not be allowed to. Victor Krum dates her, would not have dated her, Had if Hogwarts had the same sort of standard, she would not be ever introduced to Victor Krum.
That's interesting to think about it, though. People, let's just think about Durmstrang up north, wherever it's... I think there is a description where it could be. But up there in that area, what if you are a Muggle-born? How does Hermione find out that she's a witch through the Hogwarts letter? Does that mean if you are magical but born to a Muggle family, you never find out? Or how does that work then, right? Because Durmstrang's not going to invite you over. Are you going to go to Hogwarts further away?
Let's be honest. That's a lot of us. A lot of us have grown up in the real world. We all believe that there's just not a local school that allows us. There's this pure blood sort of... I don't know, like, if you're not pure blood, you can't come in, okay? So, since a lot of us are Muggle-born and we are magical, we all know that. Each of you listening, you're magical.
Yeah.
And, hey, it just happened to be that your school has this prejudice, all right?
Yeah.
We don't all happen to live in Scotland, all right?
I was wondering if Germany does not have a wizarding school, which I think, though, it might have, because there is a list of wizarding schools. I was wondering if Beauxbatons would be the next one where I would have gone if I was a kid. You know, I'm from Germany, so it's supposed to be somewhere in southern France. Probably has French students, also maybe Spanish, Portuguese, Dutch, Luxembourgians, and Belgians attended in large numbers. No Germans are mentioned here. Does I think they did come up with some sort of, because Germany has its own ministry, as we know. Have a wizard. I was just wondering if I would have gone to Beauxbatons. But right. It's so fun. That's part of Hogwarts Legacy, where we learn even more about wizarding schools all around the world. It's one of the best parts of the series, I think.
We learned that like Japan has one.
Right.
Russia has one. North America has Ilvermorny. And it kind of talks about the region, it being North America. So that includes Canada, United States, Mexico.
Probably, yes. That's a huge area, though, for one school.
It's magic.
That must be a huge school.
It's huge. They have magical kind of rooms that just, you know, expand and stuff. It's all good. It's all good. Okay. And the wizarding world is so much smaller.
Yeah.
It's a minority.
True.
And so
that's true. But I mean, yeah.
That's their great fear with that's why the statue, the statute of secrecy is such a big deal. But yeah, you've got Beauxbatons, you've got Essos, something here in Amazon. Like, I don't know how to say that, actually, but it's in the Brazilian rainforest.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what also Bill talked about. He had a pen pal.
Right. True. And so on. So there's a few listed, and then maybe there'll be more in these other expansions.
Yeah.
But they start to kind of put these regional schools on the map, which is pretty neat. I love Hogwarts Legacy. We've been playing it a lot more this summer, and it's been fun to kind of dig into that.
Yeah, probably if there was no school in Germany or the German-speaking countries, or we have a couple more than just Germany, then it would probably be somewhere. I mean, yeah, Germany's a different case because it could be north. It's in between north and southern France, somewhere in between. It could be that some of the northern students would go to Durmstrang and some of the southern students would go to Beauxbatons, but I don't know how that works. Anyway, sorry to expand on that so much. We learn from Hermione, though, as she keeps us informed about Hogwarts, about other wizarding schools, and we learn from her that it's not just Beauxbatons and Durmstrang that are hidden from Muggles, and they are unplottable, but also Hogwarts is like that, which Ron, apparently, even though he is a wizard and comes from a wizarding family, he doesn't know that. So,
which is hilarious. Ron's like, huh? What? What? Yeah, Ron. They can't see it. But you know, sometimes I think it's kind of cool. You grow up around something and you're just like, whatever, this is just how it works.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, they can't find it. It's not a big deal. I never even think about it, you know, because you're you don't realize the...
True. You just get there by train.
The structure. And you're like,
true.
How it works.
And they just hang out in their compartment. Harry gets some cauldron cakes for everybody. Other Gryffindors come over. They talk about the Quidditch World Cup. Hermione buries herself in her book and is already trying to learn the summoning charm for this year. and then Draco stops by and, you know, as always, tries to tease them, taunt them, insult them. And I wonder if
it's pretty good. It made me laugh out loud. The car.
It did.
Like Draco has some pretty good ones. Just the fact that he's just laughing at Ron, it's ridiculous. But it had me chuckling. I'm like, well, okay. I mean, if you're Harry sitting there and you hear Draco say this stuff about the robes, you're kind of like, dude.
they're pretty ridiculous.
Like, no offense, dude, but that's not funny, Ez.
No.
Ez, that is not right. Why would you laugh at that kind of stuff? Like, how dare you? And it's like, I don't know, because you can relate to it. And it's just like, I also grew up, we talked about this.
Kids are mean.
The kids are mean, but you also grew up wearing stuff that you're like, man, dude, look at that shirt I was wearing. Like, I mean, and you have to kind of laugh. And there's times where you can also be sentimental about it. Right. Be like, yeah, wow, we didn't have anything. Like, and bless my mom for going and getting that and whatnot. But at the time, I think in the moment, no, not laughable. But when you look back and you do a reread, you're kind of like, all right, it's fine. It's funny.
Well, also, I want to point out that Malfoy is pretty obsessed with Ron and with Harry the whole time, because look how well informed he is. He knows that Ron has a father and a brother at the ministry, which, you know, Percy just started. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, you know, if you really don't care about these people and
how would you know that?
Yeah. Yes. Lucius Malfoy seems very interested in the Weasleys. Why would he go home and tell his son? So clearly, Draco Malfoy must have picked it up from his father, who is not officially employed by the ministry, but he goes there all the time because he makes these grand donations.
Right.
The fact that he mentioned father and brother made me think, like, yeah, you're really into, you know, knowing what's going on, like, with Ron and Harry.
Mm-hmm.
You want to know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, I mean, it's the idea that they have something that the Malfoys want.
Mm-hmm.
They have this friendship, or they have this pleasantness, or they have this people like their personality. This is going to be a weird kind of story, but I had a colleague of mine one time where we had a disagreement, and basically my approach to it was so different, so much more casual, so much more whatever. And I remember he said, I wish I could be like you. I wish I could have that sort of response. I don't. Yeah. I'm angry and mad, and I'm upset about it, and I know I need to kind of, like, I'm not trying to brag on myself, but I actually thought a lot of that person for saying that, because I'm like, there are a lot of people who do look at other people and think, man, I wish I could react that way or be that way or behave that way or whatever, and everyone can. We all actually were at a point where we're all looking at other people wondering, like, man, what good do they have that I could maybe get, or what's something that's missing for me that they maybe have? But it goes both ways, right? That person that you're admiring, looking at, and thinking about, they're also missing something. No one's perfect. That gets back to that phrase of no one's perfect. Everybody has sort of these things that that they're all striving for and wanting and trying to learn in this, like, journey of life. Yeah. And so the Malfoys are still, it's crazy because at the end of the day, they love their son so much. And I like to imagine these, in a book series, the whole point is to play up these stock characters who are just evil, mean, no dynamics to them whatsoever. they're it's a tool. They're a device to be used in literature. And I like to suspend all of that and say, maybe there is this other whole other side to them that is really cool and kind and nice. And we just see this mean, hateful, spiteful bit, which is wrong and not cool or whatever.
Ron has, like, fantasies about pushing him off a glacier. And then it's funny. He says, shame his mother likes him.
Right.
I mean, which is true. His mother loves Draco. So.
Right. Anyway.
Let's end this chapter discussion with a quote from Hagrid. When they arrive at Hogsmeade Station, it is pouring. And we know they are on a train ride for the whole day. Like, it takes the whole day to get there, basically. So it's later in the afternoon. They're getting ready for dinner and all that stuff at Hogwarts. But the weather is so bad. Hagrid says to Ron and Hermione, see you at the feast if we don't drown.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying, imagine being one of the first graders overhearing that conversation.
What? Yeah, like... What'd they say? I mean, it's funny, because once you're those older kids and you start to say, you know, they're gonna get their fine, all as well. But it's funny for them to. It's funny to think back to what it's like to be.
Hang on a second. Younger. Didn't Colin's brother almost drown? Dennis, didn't he fall in and almost got
no clue
caught by the giant squid or something? I feel like he did. He was so proud that he fell in.
Probably. I don't remember.
I mean, that's probably next chapter, so let's table that for the next chapter.
Oh, boy. So, there you have it, friends. Some craziness with Mad-Eye Moody. Pouring rain. Durmstrang is introduced. Draco knows stuff that our trio does not know. We all know about it. It's a reread, and Bill's awesome. So, there's your summary. There's your discussion for this chapter.
Wow.
We'll be back next week with more. Maybe we will pop on here and do another sort of deep dive in terms of as soon as I start to do the wrap up. What do you got?
Sorry. But whilst crossing the school lake, as first years traditionally did with Rubeus Hagrid, Dennis fell into the lake, but he was rescued by a creature that Colin guessed was the giant squid.
It's awesome.
And he was dripping wet and then sorted and stuff. Yeah, sorry. So Dennis Creevy. They're not, I mean, Hagrid says, well, if we don't drown, we'll see you on the other side.
And Creevy almost does.
Yep. That's nuts. All right. Wrap it up.
Okay. you go ahead and wrap it up.
All right, friends. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you so much for tuning into Shell Cottage Radio 94.7 COZY. We'll hope you join us in the future. We thoroughly enjoy meeting new positive Potter people that don't behave like babbling, bumbling band of baboons.
Baboons.
If you don't want to miss out on the next episode, then be sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review. And follow us on social media at Fleur and Bill.
If you truly enjoy our content, consider supporting our growing wizarding family over on Patreon or Apple Premium. You will find all the links down below. Thanks so much to all of our current patrons. We appreciate you too, Luna and back.
On our next reread episode, we will discuss Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, Chapter 12, the Triwizard Tournament. So make sure you tune back in next time. And until then, have a great rest of your week. Thanks for joining us in our shell cottage today. We know it's not much, but it's home.
Cab drivers are baffled when they're asked to fit six huge trunks. Huge. Okay. The cab drivers are baffled when they're asked to fit.
I know, it's a terrible word.
Terrible word. I'm trying. You're breathing in the microphone. I can hear it in my headphones. When they are asked... Now you've got me with the chuckles. Okay. When they're asked to fit huge... Okay, stop. When they're asked to fit... When they are requested, the cab drivers are baffled when they're requested to fit six huge trunks, a screeching owl, and a cat into their cars. God, get the asked out of there. First, he mocks Ron for his shabby, outdated dress robes that are dangling from Pidgewidge. It's a ridiculous sentence to read. What? Shh. Quiet.
Quiet in the recording room.
I've lost my place.
Knox.